and welcome to the second season of Seniors in the Building. We are four friends exploring aspects of aging together. Our conversations run the gamut from humorous to serious to maybe outrageous. We hope to hear from new voices this year as we invite guests into our conversations. Thanks for being with us. Hi, welcome to Seniors in the Building. I'm Signe.
I'm Jack.
I'm Elaine.
And I'm Rick. Hello. Last time we had a podcast on Behind the Scenes, and near the end of the conversation, dealt with the matter of compassion, about being seen not as just a role or an occupation, but being seen as and understood as a person. And one phrase that came across was that there was a calling to be a human being in the world. That led to a discussion in between podcasts about what is a human being, and led to the question, how are we living out our humanity now? And that's sort of the matter that we'd like to try and talk to today. It's a multi-layered, multifaceted, complex kind of issue, but we just thought it was really important given the tenor of the times, given the circumstances that we live in, with all kinds of division and tension and conflict going on. And so the question we're going to try and tackle, hopefully with some insight and wisdom, is how are we living out our humanity now?
Insight and wisdom?
Yeah.
Yes.
How about confusion?
Well, that too, yes.
And compassion fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, from that in-between discussion we had, what perplexed me was the whole notion of there being, assuming that there was some kind of humanity or human essence that we need to reach for and attain.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got all philosophical in circles in my head, because I don't think there is any single definition of humanity that we could come up with that is applicable across cultures. To be human is to make, in my mind, to make decisions from day to day, every moment of the day. We are creating our humanity. So humanity doesn't precede in some sort of abstract way something that we reach for, but it is what we create continuously. And we know that the decisions that people have made and I've made sometimes are not for the good, are mm-hmm. not the best thing for me or for others. So the notion of humanity stares me in the face as being very ambiguous and developmental, you might say, or changing from time to time. So what we would label as inhuman at one point in one culture might not seem so at another. And I know that sounds horrible because I'm thinking of people who eat other people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, in the south, in the Pacific South, where is it?
It doesn't matter. What's your point? What is your point, Jack?
Well, the point is that what was human there may not be human to us today.
But so that's philosophical. That's sort of your philosophical take.
Well, it has very concrete application.
I do like what you're saying about living out moment to moment our humanity. And what does that mean? So does that mean being present to what is happening moment to moment and trying to respond in a way that is consistent, consistent with my values and with my sort of moral compass. So for me, humanity is more of a how do we treat ourselves and each other moment to moment, and how do we understand things like human rights and things like being part of something that helps to improve the lives of people in places that I may never have been.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and I guess that's more where my thought process goes to is, for example, in the last, say, 200 years or maybe more, there have been a lot of attempts to define maybe not humanity, although philosophers, theologians have tried that and succeeded to some extent, but I'm thinking more of, say, the establishment of human rights, basic
right.
human rights,
exactly.
basic dignity of all people, the idea of the call to equality of each and every individual and respect. You know, there's the Declaration on Human Rights, I believe, by the United Nations, and mm-hmm. in certain countries like Canada, the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And they point to a basic respect, a basic right that people have to, regardless of status, age, socioeconomic background, religion, and so on. And to me, that sort of putting into action the idea of being human.
Mm-hmm.
Being human means regarding and living out these social norms or these political norms, if you want to call them. And to me, that's sort of where my mind goes. We may not ever be able to precisely define what a human is, but I think we can very clearly see what it means to live out our humanity
and to be the embodiment of respect and
mm-hmm.
respect, I think, is mm-hmm. the biggest word for me.
I really struggle with this concept of being human. There's one side of me that says this is so right, so clear, so important, right? Because I grew up during a period of life in which human life was uplifted, you know, and you guys have talked about the human rights aspect and the social movements that have changed humanity and everything. And yet now I'm feeling kind of like some of that is getting wiped aside while a portion of our society wants to demolish that human success, right?
Right.
And so personally I see, and maybe this is why I'm struggling so much with it, is because personally I see it in people who have conservative values, and that's the part that I'm struggling with.
Right.
How do I be fully human and compassionate and everything with people who have these values of breaking down, demolishing, taking away,
right.
like all that negative value is just so painful to watch. So how do I be kind? How do I live out my humanity in the midst of that struggle, right? So I have to keep reminding myself, you know, stop, don't speak until you, you know, like with it in such a negative way. And yet we continue to watch human rights be demolished
society. Yeah, I think for me that's why it's so important to talk about it right now, because we are seeing in many countries, in many parts of the world, our neighbors to the south, losing rights and
yeah.
losing the opportunity to live a dignified life and having having a lot of authoritarian sorts of rules and rule and those kinds of things imposed on them. And I know what you're saying, Elaine. I feel the same, and that whole existential weariness with what is going on in the world and watching it makes it really hard.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. I hear it. I feel it.
Yeah, I think part of what can help to sort of know or combat that kind of movement or that trend nowadays is to understand where it comes from. I think it comes from this understanding that maybe permeates some societies or some mindsets that not everybody is equal. Not everyone deserves rights. Not everyone deserves respect or a place in the sun. That some are better than others, and those that are better need to either dominate or eliminate or somehow marginalize and ostracize those who they see as being lesser, those that they see as being inferior. And I think that's what we see going on. I mean, you can call them the enemy or whatever, and you dehumanize them, and you mistreat them, and you justify the mistreatment on the basis of the fact that they are not worthy of dignity, not worthy of respect.
So how does even understanding and knowing that, how does that change humanity for us? How does that, like, I'm trying to think, okay, yes, I know that. I'm aware of that. I don't like it. It enrages me. Mm-hmm. Which then starts to feel again those feelings of, you, like you described, your name.
Yeah. And you respond,
yes,
right?
Respond
and
in you, kind.
You, in kind, almost, yeah, like in kind. And you call them out on their, you know,
yes,
their S, right? And yet, what happens then is, then, you know, the next day you get a meme that says, you know, love your neighbor, right? And what do you do with that, right? Like, yes, you do have to love your neighbor and love your enemy and, you know, that kind of thing. But it just sits there. And I think as I'm getting older, I just feel like I have to say it now. It used to be that it could be done in a communal kind of way, right? That it was done through social movements and political leaders could do some of that work and everything. And I'm feeling like some of those social constructs have actually let us down. Justice, you know, the justice system or whatever. And so I'm not sure then if I should just be sitting back as a 7-year-old doing nothing. And I might lose some Facebook friends, but I'm going to say it now, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of it.
Yeah, well, to see someone else, to challenge them, I think, doesn't mean you diminish their humanity. What I think it does is challenge them to see the humanity in others and to not support these methods or these movements, these policies that diminish and dehumanize and terrorize certain people, certain mm-hmm. groups of people.
It's so hard, excuse me, it's so hard not to be cynical. But on a more positive vein,
okay.
what I think about is what might bring humanity together, because wars and atrocities and the killing of one people by another is endless, it seems, mm-hmm. in the flow of history. Mm-hmm. So what might, and I think we're at a unique time in human history in the sense that we have a consciousness now. Most people around the world, I think, know that we are on a planet. Mm-hmm. So an environmental consciousness that you'd think would unite us in terms of sustainability and care for the Earth. But we see that that's not the case.
No.
So how can you not be cynical? So what else might unite humanity to respect each other's humanness? I keep going into the realm of science fiction. That is, if only, please, if you're listening out there from outer space, if we encountered another intelligent, and I'm not saying we're intelligent.
Yeah.
Species of life whose technology was far superior than ours because it could communicate with us and maybe get here through billions of miles of space, that might unite humanity. But then I think,
no.
I think back to the movie Contact.
Yeah. I think so, Jack.
Yeah. I think in terms of movies and songs these days.
Yes, that's fun.
But, you know, their religion came to the fore as a bizarre gathering together of people wanting to escape the Earth. Mm-hmm. And anyway, I don't know what will unite humanity around being more human to mm-hmm. one another.
I thought the pandemic might, because in the beginning weeks
of that,
there was that in the beginning,
yeah.
And then somebody got their shirt in a knot over a mask.
Yes,
you
that's
know,
right.
Which then led to a vaccination, you know, like it just, like,
yeah.
You know, the overreaction to help, like, the overreaction to to helping one another was just so bizarre, right? That people found that their own personal human rights were more important than the communal rights of the community, right?
In the face of an emergency.
In the face of an emergency. I just thought, wow, you know.
But so maybe it's really hard to be human in the 21st century.
Well, I was going to say, but I do believe the pandemic did show that we are capable of being together, of sort of working together, being cooperative. There are outliers and there's resistance. I think especially as the danger of the pandemic waned with vaccines, a lot of the outliers and the resistance became very loud. But I think on the other hand, it showed that we can have the capacity to do this. And we just need to be able to somehow point out, maybe this is a naive thought, point out that being cooperative, working together, respecting the dignity of everyone actually is beneficial for everyone, that nobody loses in this. What's that meme that was going around that human rights are not pie? In other words, if others get more rights, that doesn't mean you get less. You know, it's that's not the way it works. That's not to say everybody's going to be on board, but I think there has to be continued, whether you want to call it pressure, whether you call it education, to move in that, to move us in that direction, especially with these existential issues like the, you know, climate change and you know, and the violence that's going on in various parts of the world, and the rise of authoritarianism.
And I think for me, the change will come when people like you and I have had enough, and when the whole world has had enough of it, and continue to rise as we've, again, going through the Human Rights Museum, which is located here in Winnipeg. You walk up as you're going through the movements, human right movements of time, and you're walking up toward, you know, the sensation is walking up and rising out of it. So I believe that it might take things getting worse, but I think that we will all start to, as you say, Lane, I'm not going to not say anything anymore. I'm going to say something now. And I think more and more of us are starting to say something. More and more of us are starting to be diligent in terms of not allowing some people to be elected and not allowing some people to be in power, and working very hard to keep those rights that we all deserve, all have a right to. I think it's not going to take anybody coming from outer space. It's going to take us as a people around the world rising up and saying no more.
Yeah. When you mentioned science fiction, Jack, I thought though of science. One of the things that I think can help is if we learn about what you might call some of the physical, biological facts. One that always strikes me is when you compare the DNA of people, humans, it's identical throughout the world. You know, a 99.99% of everyone's DNA is similar. Well, then why are we focusing on that very, very small percentage to create differences? It doesn't make sense. It's not logical. And I think if that is an area where when someone tries to say, well, I am superior, you say, but look at this. This is the factual reality of who you are and who we are on that genetic level. So
could the reality be that we really don't want to face too squarely? It could be that human beings are fundamentally irrational creatures. In spite of our scientific developments, we are a bit crazy as human beings. And we have all kinds of moral codes coming from philosophies and religions that try to suppress and deal with that irrationality. And that's, those are good things. I don't mean to say they're bad things. But fundamentally, there's a basic human angst that is a disquiet in the human soul that surges up collectively every now and then and motivates these horrific acts of inhumanity to other human beings. And that is the perennial human predicament, I think. And maybe that's my pessimism, but I think it's a realism.
But you're touching on sort of the whole patriarchy, and I hate to even raise that here.
Patriarchy's a big part of it.
Well, but so in terms of a patriarchal culture, emotions are seen as bad, and rational thoughts are seen as good, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, has done us such a disservice because we need both. We need to be able to feel free to grow and learn emotionally, not just intellectually and rationally. And I think that there are, you know, education supports that whole growing intellectually, but there's no real program anywhere that people take alongside that to grow emotionally and to gain emotional intelligence and moral compasses and develop a sense of right and wrong in the world. It's changed. It's been eroded somehow. And so I think that I hear what you're saying, Jack, but I do think that it's a result of suppression, another type of suppression.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. I think that that is a patriarchal kind of moment, right? That
so rather than suppressing the what's called the irrational, or actually, I think more accurately, in my mind, the emotional aspect, need to get in touch with them and to find out how the emotional side of our humanity and the supposed objective intellectual side, how those two need to work hand in hand rather than sort of suppressing one for the sake of the other.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of Stanford University in California, that they actually, if I remember correctly, they teach courses on compassion.
Yeah.
How to be compassionate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And techniques whereby you are drawn into the feeling of compassion and understanding. Because that might not be innate.
No.
It's something that could be learned.
Yeah, it could be learned, yeah. I would agree with you on that. And I think part of that is also part of the educational system that we grew up in, right?
Yeah.
That we were taught to be compassionate. We were taught to care about one another, right? We were taught to be communally responsible for each other too, right? Those things, those concepts were taught to us. But somewhere along the way, somebody and many people feel like that was something that was taken away from them, like that they couldn't be their fully human person with that anger inside about why we had to learn this, right? And so, you know, again, we can keep doing that. And I hear that, you know, and I see that in the school system today, that they're teaching empathy, they're teaching compassion, they don't tolerate bullying anymore, you know?
Yeah.
So they are working on that. But we are also working with families who, you know, you get taught one thing in the home, at the school, and then you go home and that gets either debunked or destroyed or whatever,
yeah.
Right? And I felt that personally as a child, right? That, you know, that I was taught one thing, but at home you were, it was a different situation.
I wonder whether there isn't a countervailing force against the embedding intuitively of compassion in people in a highly technological society that we're becoming, where informational access is everything.
Yeah.
Like using ChatGPT, it just spews out information. Mm-hmm. And so we're becoming a global civilization that is fixated on information acquisition. And there's great benefits to that, but the humanistic side of things may be lost in that.
Can
they build into ChatGPT compassion? In some ways, they can, which is really scary, because what's the word for it? That it tends to be very overly affirmative. When I ask ChatGPT a question, it says, always begins, "That is an amazingly insightful question you're asking." Subtext, "You must be a friggin' genius."
Well, then maybe you are.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah. Something you said, Jack, made me think there is a difference between saying what you're feeling and owning that and putting that out there and blasting and trampling all over other people.
Yeah.
So
sure.
there's a very qualitative difference between that. And one is sort of anger and blame filled and resentful, and the other is from a place of, this is what I'm feeling and I need to express that. But there's no intent to hurt anyone else with that. There's no intent. It's just a matter of saying what you believe and standing firm in that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a fine line.
Yeah. Well, I think fear plays a part in that. That's again, getting in touch with that emotion and knowing that it's there. Because often I think many of these pushbacks against equality, against diversity, and so on, is based on fear, which is often not rational. I think the fear needs to be then acknowledged and then objectively as well as subjectively looked at, either individually and societally as well. Like, what are we afraid of? Why are we afraid? You know, and then moving from there to, what is the answer to this? Is the answer, you know, suppressing other groups, suppressing people and creating an enemy out there? Or is the answer, you know, learning how others deserve respect and equality and working toward that in a communal cooperative way? And I know that sounds maybe too idealistic and too pie in the sky, but it does work. It's just that we need to convince people that that is the way to, say, overcome fear, overcome discrimination and all kinds of oppression that's out there.
And I don't feel I can do that in isolation. I feel like I need to have the support of others and a group and a movement to push at that. I was noting that the woman who actually got the Nobel Peace Prize this year is in hiding in Venezuela.
Oh, okay.
And she's the woman who leads the opposition to the current regime, and she has been fighting for democracy. And the statement from the committee was, we don't support authoritative regimes, we support continuing the furthering of democracy in the world.
Yeah.
And I think it's places like that and statements like that and finding those groups that are really working toward that, that will, like I said before, it's going to be a groundswell of people resisting.
Yeah. Well, and I think those are the examples that can give us hope, right? We talked a bit about, you know, fatigue and being, I forget the exact term you used, but that we're just worn out with this. But maybe that's tied in with that is a sense of hopelessness and despair. Those are the things that kind of example that you shared can bring us hope. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we need to just take a rest. You made a comment about the Human Rights Museum, which we have in our city, and how you ascend up. And at one point along the way, there is a meditation rest area
beautiful.
There too.
It's a beautiful spot.
And
yes.
What it means is that every
should
so
be
often,
obligatory.
Yeah, you need to take a rest. You need that self-care
That's
is
beautiful.
Is very much a part of this
it
too.
Is. Yeah.
You know, we can't just, you know, burn ourselves out or burn everyone else out. We need to be empathetic to ourselves as well. And that's, yeah, that's a great exactly. human need. Yeah.
I always tend to focus, as you know all too well, on the problematic. Mm-hmm. And I think the problem in our age, and it's increasing and intensifying every day, is war over information. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because you think that since we have the capacity, unlike any other time in human history, to convey information across cultures like never before, people have a sense of the global community existing, for mm-hmm. one thing, unlike they never had, rarely had before. But the whole, the disinformation phenomena that's taking place, information about our common humanity is dangerous to a lot of people, mm-hmm. right? To segment it off radical groups that don't believe in unity and oneness of humanity. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what's happening with artificial intelligence is at the forefront of this information war. I think I had a book somewhere, InfoWars. Mm-hmm. And a lot have been written about it. And that is our era now. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what the resolution to that is. Except well, maybe those could the, that capacity for spreading information could be in the hands of people who want to unite humanity and not particularize different groups and put one group against the other.
Mm-hmm. But bullies don't allow that.
No, they don't.
Bullies do not allow
good point
yeah. information to come forward, right? And bullies exist because that is how power exists, right? Mm-hmm. In that respect, mm-hmm. right? It is all about power and who holds the word. I would agree with you in terms of that war on information now. Having read, a fair bit of history and history around the period of the Reformation, right? That Gutenberg press totally was a war on information, right? Because the people in power needed to destroy that distribution, right? Because they needed to keep people ignorant, right? We needed to keep people fearful. And so, again, those kind of tools keep coming up in generations, and they've been there for a long time, right? If you think about the issues around residential schools in Canada and how much that was hidden, yes. that information was hidden, right? Or if you think about the writings of, Gloria Steinem, right? So the war, the info wars are actually work against humanity cooperating, humanity having a peaceful existence.
But maybe they have the potential yet to contribute.
They could, yes, mm-hmm. but it depends on who holds that. Who's holding that information, yeah. right? And how is that information being distributed?
And what you're saying is, and who's in power? Who has control over it?
Yeah, who has control over it, right? And so again, it goes back to we can educate the kids, we can talk about it, we can belong to social movements, those kinds of things. But information is almost always going to be a contributing factor for both sides, I guess. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's what I should be saying, is that for both sides.
Well, and I think that's where one of the areas where pushing back needs to be sort of constant, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because misinformation is being spread out there. But the probability of sharing information, factual, honest information, is also there. And I think you need to take advantage of the opportunities there, whether it's on a community level, whether it's within our family, even say you're around the dinner table, Canadian Thanksgiving's coming up, and someone at the dinner table spouts some, inappropriate, discriminatory, bigoted statements, and everyone can
because
sit,
Uncle Ralph always there, does that. Right?
Can sit there in silence, and everyone goes, "Oh, we can't say anything against him," or we can start to push back. That's one example. Sort around the dinner table, or it could be communally, you know, where people will gather to protest some kind of injustice, and on and on. It can work on many levels, and it's a hard slog. I agree, but I think in order for us to defend the human rights, the humanity of all people, I think it's incumbent on us, regardless of our age, to be part of that. Mm-hmm. I just don't think there's any other way.
I agree.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, you know, I think, Jack, this goes back to we're not done yet, right?
Yeah, we're not done yet.
We're not done yet. And in terms of human capacity for, you know, for peace or whatever, we've got to keep working on that, even at our age, right, as we age. I think also we have to do that not just because of our age, but because of our experiences and because of all the knowledge that has been collected over, you know, this generation, right, that we have come from, where we have come from a place where those fights started, right?
Right.
Those rights, human rights issues came to the forefront, right?
We saw the statement being born.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We saw the statement being born. We've seen it enacted in across our country and in places around the world. And so, you know, we have to be the people who keep talking about this, mm-hmm. and encouraging other generations behind us to be doing the same thing, right?
Yeah, and finding allies, people who are also in similar situations or similar mindsets, who are willing to work together or perhaps learn from others as well. I think that's hugely critical. Again, I've shared this on other podcasts, you know, the example of the indigenous community and the leaders there who talk about, for example, our relationship to nature, our relationship to an environment, our relationship to creation, and how significant that is in their background and culture and values, and how we, many in our industrialized North American Western society, have lost our way on that. But to realize that there is a real important truth there, and then to join in with that, to see where we can also, you know, be respectful of society and work with them to help them or to be allies with them as they push that forward for the sake of all of humanity. You know,
mm-hmm. to raise it up as a legitimate voice.
As a legitimate voice,
in the context of that.
Yeah, so that's just sort of one example of where I think we can find allies. And again, we find that we're not alone in this. You know, we're not done yet. We're also not alone in this. And it's an important issue and an important struggle. So how are we living out our humanity now? Well, we sort of went into one very, I think, important tangent or direction, I should say, and that is dealing with human rights and the need for emphasizing it today. So living out our humanity is an ongoing issue because we are human. And hopefully this has been some food for thought for all of you and has given some inspiration. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for spending this time with us on Seniors in the Building. If you enjoyed today's conversation, we'd love for you to follow us. Join our growing community and keep sharing in the stories, wisdom, laughter, and life as seniors. Until next time, stay curious and seek hope. You can find us under Seniors in the Building on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and possibly wherever you listen to other podcasts. Our email is forseniorsinthebuilding@gmail.com. That's the numeral 4, followed by seniorsinthebuilding, lowercase, all one word. We'd love to hear from you. You can also leave a review wherever you listen to your podcast. We'd like to thank Thomas Waschenfelder for our logo design, and Amy Waschenfelder and collaborator Natasha Franzblow for our musical jingle for the podcast. We really appreciate their input and the support of all of our families in this endeavor, for listening, for reviews, for tech support, and love.